Hello and welcome to this edition of Chris Radio Presents, produced in the studios of Chicago Lighthouse Media at the Chicago Lighthouse. If you saw an individual out in the street accompanied by an animal, would you be able to tell by simply looking at it if it is a service animal or an emotional support animal? The Department of Transportation is seeking to make this definition more clear for flyers with disabilities that utilize service animals. Today's guests, who are both guide dog users, will be talking about how these changes could potentially affect them, as well as about the arduous process that goes behind training guide dogs and other service animals. My first guest is Teresa Stern, who is the Vice President of Outreach at Guide Dogs for the Blind. Teresa, welcome, and thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, a lot of us might have heard of service animals, emotional support animals. What's the difference between the two?
Well, that's a great question, and I think it's confusing to people. So a service animal is defined by the Americans with Disabilities Act as an animal that has been, or dog or miniature horse, trained to perform a task to mitigate someone's disability. So they have been trained just for that purpose, where an emotional support animal is basically an animal that brings comfort to someone simply because they're an animal. So they haven't really been trained to do anything.
Do both service animals and emotional support animals have access to all public places?
There's some difference with access. So service animals have access to public accommodations, and including air travel and housing. Emotional support animals do not have public accommodation access, but traditionally they have had access for air travel and in housing.
Recently, it's been all over the news about new proposed regulations as far as air travel goes that the Department of Transportation is proposing, and they're seeking comment from users. Can you briefly discuss some of those proposed regulations?
Actually, it's about a year and a half ago. They've been, you know, working with airlines and with passengers. The Department of Transportation has, because they really want to make, you know, the air travel, you know, safe and comfortable for everyone.
Why exactly are these regulations being proposed?
A lot of people have been, I think, taking advantage of some of their rules, especially around emotional support animals, because they don't want to pay for pet fees and that kind of thing. And so they've been having a lot of animals on board airplanes that really aren't trained to be, you know, in sort of stressful situations like that, and have had, you know, problems with them biting or relieving themselves on airplanes and that kind of thing. So it's become really kind of a mess, especially for those of us like myself who have a guide dog. I'm blind, I have a guide dog, I rely upon my guide dog to travel. And so when there's all these kind of crazy animals on board that aren't really prepared to be on board, then we have problems.
There are two major recommendations proposed. What are those?
So one of the recommendations that we made a couple of years ago was that the DOT change the Air Carrier Access Act to sort of harmonize with the ADA in terms of its definition of animals that can fly with passengers. And so they have done that with this new notice of public rulemaking, where they have said that going forward, they're proposing that only trained service animals will be allowed on aircraft. So emotional support animals would be considered a pet animal and have to deal with the regulations for pet animals, which generally is a fee and being in a carrier and that kind of thing. So that part, you know, we're happy about at Guide Dogs because it does sort of harmonize the two legislations.
Are there any requirements as far as paperwork goes that guide dog or service animal users have to provide to airlines?
No, currently there is no paperwork, no special forms or anything that need to be filled out by service animal users. For those people who are traveling with emotional support animals, I do believe they have a form to fill out.
What forms would airlines require from service animal users?
What they are recommending is that airlines will be permitted to use a couple of forms four people who are claiming to have service dogs with them. And one of them is a form that would attest to the fact that the dog was trained. And basically, it's something that would be filled out by the dog handler, an attestation saying that, yes, this dog is trained to mitigate my disability and, you know, is reliable in public. The second thing that they can require is a form that would say that if it's a flight that's more than 8 hours long, then they have to sign something that says, yes, my dog is not going to relieve on board. And if it does relieve, we have a sanitary way of doing that. And then the third piece of paperwork that they would be allowed to ask from disabled handlers with service animals is a health certificate or a something from the veterinarian that would attest to the good health of the animal.
Would there be any consequences or implications for travelers with service animals?
With these requirements, because they're paperwork, now they're saying that the airlines can actually ask people with disabilities who are traveling with service animals to arrive to the airport an hour before other customers so they can fill all this stuff out. And so we, you know, here at Guide Dogs for the Blind, we definitely have concerns about these types of things sort of placing an undue burden on handlers who are, you know, traveling with, you know, with their guide dogs. So we're working right now on formulating our response and what sort of suggestions we might make.
I myself am actually looking into potentially getting a guide dog and just picturing myself in that scenario of having to be at the airport an hour ahead. You know, we already have to be at the airport a couple hours ahead of time. I can already imagine the burden it would, you know, put on me and other guide dog users.
Well, and actually, you know, and when you're traveling with a guide dog, you're really trying to limit the time you're sitting in the airport so that, you know, there is time for them to relieve, you know,
absolutely,
so they don't have to hold it for so long. So, so that is a problem. And the other one, you know, the veterinary form, it doesn't clearly say like how often that would have to be updated and that kind of thing. But if that means, you know, a visit to the veterinarian, you know, frequently, then that could be a, you know, financial burden for people. So, so that's, you know, it's good that they're asking for comments, and we're going to try to make some recommendations.
You yourself are a guide dog user. Do these regulations concern you as a guide dog user?
Yes, they do. The regulations that are proposed are concerning to me, but I feel like, you know, that we need to know more information. You know, are there ways that some of the stuff could be done, you know, prior to travel, or, you know, where it wasn't, you know, having to get there early? But I do get the situation that airlines are in right now with so many sort of bad actors trying to make it seem as though their dog is a service animal and then, you know, having problems on board. I mean, I know guide dog users whose dog has been attacked by a supposed service animal on an airplane. So I don't like that either.
Why is your guide dog so important to you?
For me, as a person with a visual impairment, obviously I need some help getting around. So I can use my cane, which is great, and I'm a big advocate of cane travel. But I really enjoy working with a guide dog, and I feel like I have a little more, I don't know, just a little more self-confidence. I'm getting out more with my guide dog. It's a faster way to travel for me. And it really opened up the world to me when I got my guide dog, and I felt like I could really go anywhere and do whatever I wanted to do and, you know, be an asset to society. So, you know, it's just probably as important as for a sighted person being able to drive a car or, you know, those types of things. So it's really sort of my ticket to freedom out there in the big world.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, you are from Guide Dogs for the Blind, which has two campuses, one in San Rafael, California, and another in Oregon. Can you talk generally about what the training is like and what the process is like to get a guide dog?
Absolutely. So, and I think it relates back to, you know, why it's so important to make sure that really only trained service animals are out and about in public, because it is a lot of training, and it starts when the puppies are born. So from day one, the puppies that are born on our campus are handled by humans, they're socialized appropriately, and then they go out to our puppy raising homes when they're about 8 weeks old. They lived with a puppy raising family for a little over a year. And during that time, the puppy raisers are taking them out, you know, wherever they go. So to the movies, to, you know, on the bus, on the ferry, you know, just becoming part of their lives so that the dogs really get socialized to lots of different kinds of environments so that they can be really confident wherever they go. And a confident dog is going to, you know, be well behaved. So usually when you see a dog acting poorly, it's because it's fearful. So all that training is so important, even before they come in back to guide dogs for their formal training, where they work with one of our instructors. And all of our instructors have a 3-year apprenticeship. So they've really done a lot of work learning orientation mobility skills and dog training skills. And so those guys train up these dogs, takes about 12 weeks. And then the dogs are ready for class. And then on the people side of things, sort of preparing for a guide dog as a person, you really want to make sure you've got those really good O&M skills and can get around, kind of know where you're going, have places that you go, so that when you come home with your guide dog, you can really bond with them through the work that you're doing. And then you make an application either online or you can give us a call. And we do what's called a phone consultation. And we want to hear a little bit more about your lifestyle, where you go, routes that you take. And then we send out a person to do a home interview, which is one of our instructors will come to your home. You'll do a little bit of chatting with them about what it's like to have a guide dog. And then you're going to show them some of your routes that you have in your home area. And do an actual simulated guide dog walk, which is called a Juno walk. So you can kind of get the idea about how different the travel is between using a cane and using a guide dog. Cane is a tactile way of getting around, and a guide dog is sort of trained to go around obstacles, so it's not tactile. So you have to sort of use some different skills when you're using a guide dog than using the cane. So we kind of go over that with you. And then if all that seems good, we hook you up with a class and you come into class. All of our services, including transportation, are provided for free. It's a 2-week program, so it's one instructor for 2 students for 2 weeks. So you get a lot of one-on-one time with an instructor, and the program is really customized to meet your needs.
And that just comes to show how much of a thorough process it is to train a service animal.
Exactly.
That brings me up to another point. How does the dog know where to go?
Well, that's a very good question. And that goes right back to those orientation mobility skills that are so important. So you need to know where you're going, and then you direct your dog, and he'll make sure that you don't run into stuff or fall off curbs or that kind of thing. But you really need to be in tune with where you're going so that you can direct the dog and they can guide you safely. Over time, when you end up going to a lot of the same places all the time, the dogs are going to have an initiative and they're going to want to show you places that, you know, oh, hey, maybe it's the bank today, you know, or whatever. But again, that's why it's so important that you know where you're going so that you can be sure that you're going to the place you want to go.
In other words, it's a team effort, if you will.
That's a perfect word for it. It's a team effort.
I know that there are many resources out there, you know, for people that maybe have experienced discrimination, or for businesses that maybe would like to learn more about the rules of service animals, particularly guide dogs. Could you give us some of those resources?
Absolutely. So, you know, even on our website, which is guidedogs.com, we have some resources. And even just Googling service animals and the ADA will give you, you know, lots of information about the questions that a business can ask when a dog's in there. And also just really letting them know and understand that any dog, whether it's a service dog or not, just like a person, if it's poorly behaved, where it's, you know, sort of a threat to the other people and to the sort of essential function of the business, that dog can be asked to leave. So I think that we really need to empower business owners to feel comfortable about, you know, saying, hey, you know, your dog is just pooped in the grocery store. You know, you need to take the dog out of here because that's a threat to the health and safety of the people who come here. So I think that that's an important piece to understand. But yeah, the ADA websites have a lot of information. Guide Dogs for the Blind has a lot of information. So definitely read up on all that stuff and kind of know what your rights are.
And that website where you can find more information about Guide Dogs for the Blind and other resources is www.guidedogs.com. And now, here in the studio, we have two very special guests, well known here at the Lighthouse, Maureen Reed and her guide dog, Gaston. Maureen is from our Employment Services Program. Welcome, Maureen and Gaston.
Hi,
Welcome.
Sandy.
How are you?
I'm lovely.
How many guide dogs have you had? And tell us a little bit about your current guide dog.
I've gone to Guide Dogs for the Blind three mm-hmm. times to go get service dogs. I've had a dog named Pepita, but we just called her Pita. The second one was Promise, and my current one is Gaston. We did take him with us to Paris because he does have that fancy French name.
And it's perfect.
I know, right? He has been working on April 1st. 4 years I've had him now. So
you are a frequent flyer.
Yes. And
so clearly you like to fly, but does Gaston like to fly?
All of my dogs have been excellent travelers.
Uh-huh.
They just lay at my feet. A lot of people ask me about how I fly with him, and he always sits at my feet. Most often I end up sitting in a bulkhead seat, but if that's not the circumstance that we are allowed to sit in that seat for whatever reason, he can still sit at my feet in the regular airplane seats. So you just can take off their harness and put that in the overhead bin. I mean, he rides in the front seat of cars with me where he sits at my feet, like if I do Uber or Lyft. So he gets pretty small, but he's probably about 70, 75 pounds.
So he's a pretty big dog then. And you know, our audience is definitely curious. What is it like to fly with a service animal?
A lot of the airlines, when you call in advance, you can work with them to see if you can get a bulkhead seat because you have a service dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty savvy at that at this point. I booked a flight this morning to go to Fort Lauderdale, and I expect I'll get an email from them because I checked the box that said I was blind and that I had a guide dog and that it was a dog because they ask you what kind of service animal it is. What was interesting is in preparation for the flight I'm going on tomorrow morning, I did
mm-hmm.
speak with them on the phone, and they did ask me to bring copies of his vaccination records.
And is that something that they've asked you before? Are you used to that type of question?
That is new, but I would say because of a lot of the news that's going on about the changes in the rules, that they would like to ensure that I have a dog that has been vaccinated and mm-hmm. is not an increased risk of a carrier of some sort of illness. I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, there have been flight attendants that have been bitten, and you want to make sure that if a dog bites you, maybe it's fully vaccinated and you shouldn't have to worry about that sort of thing.
That's a valid concern.
Yeah.
The flight has been booked, and the day finally comes for takeoff, Maureen. How does the process with security work at the airport?
One of the things that I love is we figured out a system to get through security. Some of them like to tell me how they want me to do things. And one of my lines that I say is that I'm blind every day and that I have been through this process. And, you know, if it's okay with you, can we do it this way? And, you know, the way that I suggest we normally do. Because I've had one TSA agent ask me if I could take all of the dog's gear off because they're going to set the alarm off that way. And I said, so the way that I have control of him, the dog, is with all of this gear. And if you ask me to take it all off, then I've just got a dog running in security. So I said, well, you know, this process is what I normally do, and,
uh-huh.
and if that's okay with you. I try not to tell them.
Oh, absolutely.
And create conflict, but it's something I've done. I've just really had so many more positive experiences
uh-huh.
traveling with the dog. It's hard for me to think of any negatives.
Have you encountered any negative reactions? Maybe passengers being scared of service animals?
Well, so one of the things when you have a disability, whether you have a service dog or not, you're allowed to pre-board.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you a little extra time, some assistance from the flight attendants to get to your seat, put anything over in the overhead bin, that sort of thing. So I don't often interact with a lot of other passengers in that regard, but more often people don't even realize he's there. So one of our funny stories that I thought I would share
mm-hmm.
is Tom and I were on a Southwest Airlines flight from Chicago.
Sure.
the flight crew was making the announcement that everybody had to put everything away, and when you sit in the bulkhead, there can't be anything at your feet. Mm-hmm. So she's walking past us. I was standing up, putting my backpack in the overhead bin, and my husband was sitting in the window seat. And, of course, Promise, my previous guide dog, was laying at his feet. And she asked Tom three different times, getting a little more agitated each time, if he would put his things at his feet away in the overhead bin. And the third time she said, "Sir, I don't know what's at your feet, if it's a bag, if it's a coat, whatever it is, but it's got to go in the overhead bin." And he said, "Do you mean the dog?" Because when he travels, I often take his harness off. So she didn't, I guess, realize it was the dog. And so she was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry." And she's crawling on the floor, fussing over him. And the other flight attendants were teasing her. And they're like, "Did she just ask you to put the dog in the overhead bin?" I mean, they're black fur balls that they curl up into themselves, like tuck their nose in and their feet in. And she just didn't realize. So they're not very obtrusive, right? Like, people just don't notice them. Well, none of our dogs have made any noise. They just go right to sleep.
How do kids usually react? Like, maybe when they see you, you know, getting off the plane, or when you're waiting to get on the plane.
You know, it's funny. Sometimes they're afraid, and sometimes they kind of want to run over and touch him. And when he's in his harness, I don't let people touch him. Mm-hmm. It's just easier for him to be very black and white about when he's allowed to be social and when he's not, because it ends up being a safety risk. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely take his harness off if I was going to have him be social with somebody. But you know, it's a teaching moment. I very rarely have kids afraid. One of the interesting things is a lot of times people will bring their dogs on planes that maybe aren't a guide dog.
Sure.
And it's always like the little ones that are in the carriers, and they just bark and bark and bark and bark and bark at Gaston. That's the biggest reaction I get is from probably the pet dogs that come on the carriers.
Sure.
It is hysterical.
One of the things, Maureen, that Teresa was discussing with the proposed changes in regulations is to require providing proof that your dog is well trained, that if in a flight that's longer than 8 hours, it will not relieve itself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a result, you know, this might implicate for service animal users to get to the airport earlier to fill out these forms and whatnot.
I mean, I would imagine they would provide those for you in advance. And 'cause, so when I fly internationally and I'm taking the dog with me,
sure,
I have to do a lot of that prep work. And that makes sense because it's an international flight. And they did ask me those types of questions about how he behaves and the ability to stay on a plane and not have to relieve himself.
Yeah. And, you know, you just touched on an interesting point. Sorry to interrupt, but that's actually interesting. We are familiar with how some of the process here in the U.S., but how does it differ flying internationally?
I mean, it's a lot more complicated. And I've also taken my dogs to Hawaii. And so because it's an island, you had to do some additional work. And
sure,
we were met at the airport when we arrived in Kona by a veterinarian who checked all of his paperwork. But I know that is what you need to do when you're going to go to Hawaii. Domestic travel is a whole lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems I think that people are concerned about is if you have to do a last-minute flight, whether that's for a family emergency or for business or that sort of thing, it cuts down on the turnaround time for you to be able to accomplish all of that. United asked me to get vaccination records for guests on for the flight for tomorrow. I just called my vet office and they emailed that to me as a document, and that was really easy to do. But I asked them last week on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave them time to do that. Beyond that, I don't know how much additional work it's going to be for me to do it the way things stand right now. But my concern is if they put some rules in place that make it more difficult for someone and prevents them from being able to take one of those last-minute trips if they needed to for an emergency. And, again, for work, right? Like, if something comes up, you want to be able to just get on the plane and go with your dog. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is that the ADA doesn't require us to show any documentation,
mm-hmm,
but the ADA doesn't necessarily apply when you're flying.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't ask me for identification or ID cards,
sure,
but I, of course, have an ID card.
Sure.
And for the protection of the flight attendants, yeah, they should make sure that those dogs are vaccinated and trained properly. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm torn, right? I'm really torn about people's ability to travel easily versus implementing a lot of those requirements that might be prohibitive for some people.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it is definitely a subject that needs to be taken seriously into consideration. Now, I personally have heard a lot of news stories, you know, regarding emotional support animals. Animals like cats, snakes.
I mean, I heard about the peacock. I've heard and
the peacock too. I've heard of that. But, you know, I'm just curious as we're talking about all of this. Have you personally ever encountered a emotional support animal that is not a dog?
I have not. I'm kind of curious how that would play out. I mean, because there are some crazy stories out there, right? I did hear about Pace Paratransit. There was a driver that told me about a woman bringing a python snake on the paratransit
vehicle.
Oh my
gosh.
With, you know, it was her, you know, it kind of wrapped around her shoulders and felt secure for her. So it was an emotional support animal in that regard.
You know,
the person that was telling me the story was the driver with the snake, and she was terrified. And the dispatch people told her she had to take the person with the snake. So I just feel like it needs to be an animal that is, in fact, trainable and safe for other people.
Would you feel comfortable traveling without a service animal?
It would be really weird to not have one of them with me. They become an extension of you. They're with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They are just always with you, and it's very strange to not have them. I mean, we go on a 10-day camping trip to a bluegrass festival in Telluride, Colorado, and I bring the dogs on those trips too. There's not a lot of places I wouldn't take them.
Well, Maureen, I won't take up more of your time because I know that you have another flight to prepare for. So thank you and Gaston for joining us again. As always, it was a pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this edition of Chris Radio Presents. If you would like to find out more information about Chicago Lighthouse Media or the Chicago Lighthouse, you can go to our website at www.chicagolighthouse.org. And there you can find our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Instagram pages. Have a great day.